first, we're going to work off a source page for the most part today. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, take one and pass them down. The extras over here as people come in. Yeah. So we have read through Perek Yotet and the very beginning of Perek Chaf, just to see the context. One more, right, over here. People come in, they'll take a few extras. And, so we read through Perek Yotet. Perek Yotet is the story that sort of sets in motion the whole sequence of events related to what has been known as the story of the Pilegesh Begiva, the concubine. She's really, it's not really about her as much as about what happens afterwards in the civil war with Binyamin. But certainly Perek Yotet starts with the story of the concubine, with the Pilegesh. We looked at the story itself. We started to explore some of the themes and some of the issues. The first thing we noticed, I think, was the question of the relationship between this Ish and the Pilegesh, and the complexity of how that relationship is defined. On the one hand, she's described just as that, as a Pilegesh, which would have the name of how the story got its name, the Pilegesh Begiva. On the other hand, there are references to her as him as her husband, or her as his wife, Ishto, the notion of a father-in-law, and which has a sort of certain formality to it, Vatiznela Pilaksho, the notion that she is unfaithful to him, or at least that's how it's described at the beginning. So it's unclear exactly as to the nature of the relationship between them. What is clear is that the relationship is, number one, complex, and number two, that he really treats her, regardless of whatever her status is, he certainly treats her as no more than a Pilegesh, and probably a lot less. In other words, the way in which the relationship is depicted, it's clearly depicted from the perspective of his lack of respect, is putting it mildly, his total mistreatment of her.
Put it in the same place as the towels.
Oh, this is the new one that they came
with. Is that the one with the tabs? That's, did you just bring it back?
That's what I
was talking about. Is it called?
Is this for me?
Yes.
Thank you very much. That's so sweet of you.
I'm on the website, though, and they said there's no such thing.
I'd like to get
that. Oh, my goodness.
I think you have to buy it in Israel.
It's the card.
Isn't that amazing? Tabs.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it's all in Hebrew, so...
Awesome. Pause. Thank you. Okay.
Sorry.
Shechianu v'kimanu. We have a new Tanakh.
Sorry.
Thank you. Well. Okay, so we... who are we up to? I just lost my train of thought for a second.
About how he treated
us. Oh, the mistreatment of the Pilegesh. And part of the dynamic of that relationship, obviously there's complexity to the relationship between him and her, but there's also a series of complexities introduced by their relationship because of the tribal identification. It's he's from Shevet. Right? He is essentially a Levi, lives in Har Ephraim. She is from Bethlehem Yehuda,
yeah.
And on their way home, they encounter a city, Giv'ah, which is from Shevet Binyamin. And the challenges in each of these relationships, the challenge between the father-in-law and the daughter, and the son-in-law, the challenge between the man and this Pilegesh, ultimately the attack of Bnei Binyamin on this Pilegesh, the lack of hospitality between Bnei Binyamin and this man who's sitting in the middle of the street with no place to go because nobody will take them in, except for this Zaken, who happens to be from Har Ephraim, which is of the same tribal connection that he is from, although he's a Levi, he's from Ephraim, but he comes from Har Ephraim. So ultimately, the lines here cross between all of the tribal connections. And so part of the question that's underlining the story is the lack, is the anger, animosity, and conflict that's on all lines, is it because of the people who are cruel, or is part of that cruelty related to the perception that somebody from a different tribe is an outsider? The sort of xenophobic tribal focus that I think permeates the story. That piece of it connects us back to other examples in Sefer Shoftim where we have seen the same idea, that if somebody's from a different tribe, they're an outsider. We treat those from our own tribe differently than we treat Israelites from a different tribe. Other examples that come to mind where we've seen this pattern before. Classically, the introduction, for example, to the story of Yiftach. What was the introduction to the story of Yiftach? Do you remember Yiftach? It wasn't so long ago, Yiftach. Right? What was the story of Yiftach? How does it begin?
This was about Yiftach. Was like a stepbrother to this family.
Correct.
His,
go back.
His mother was. Have to go back further than that.
No, no, you're correct. Correct. Okay. Just go jump back to the beginning of the text, which is Perek Yud Aleph. You are 100% correct.
The beginning of the text.
They exiled him.
They exiled him, and the judges also.
I don't know what that meant. Right, they exiled him. Perek Yud Aleph. What page is 307? Mm-hmm. Beginning of Perek Yud Aleph, correct. So if we look back to the beginning of the story of Yiftach, and this is the middle this is 9-8 chapters ago. V'Yiftach HaGiladi Haya Gibor Chayil. Yiftach HaGiladi was a warrior, he was a shofet. V'hu ben Isha Zona. He was the son of it says Isha Zona, which is a prostitute. V'yoled Gilad et Yiftach. Gilad was his father. Vateled eshet Gilad lobanim. Obviously, Mr. Gilad here has a wife. So in addition to the zona, he has an isha who gives birth to children. Vayigdulu b'nei ha'isha. The children of the wife grew up. Vayigashu et Yiftach. They exiled Yiftach. They threw him out. Why? Vayomu lo lo tinchal b'vet avinu. We don't want you to take a portion of the inheritance of our father. Ki ben isha acheret ata. Because you are the son of another woman. So the Rabag and the Radak and many of the Mefarshim suggest, how do you call somebody an isha? How do you call this woman who is Yiftach's mother, on the one hand a zonah, on the other hand an isha acheret? An isha acheret means a second wife. A zonah means a prostitute. There's no connection. There's no relationship in the case of a zona. So the Rabbak suggests that this, what was the definition of the second wife? She was from a different tribe. And he took either as a pilegesh, or as a second wife, or as a wife, when the first wife wouldn't have children, she took her as a second wife to bear children, like Abraham who took Hagar. There's precedent for it. But to describe that as a zona is very derogatory. Why? Because that's the way the children saw it, and that's the way perhaps even he saw it, considering the fact that she was from a different tribe, says Rabak. In other words, the tribal connection here is not an accident. It's clearly a sense that anybody from a different tribe was an outsider, was of second class identity. You also have, for example, the stories that we saw go all the way back to Gidon. Remember Gidon? Way back when, this is several years ago, right? But Gidon, even Yiftach, we don't have to go back to so far. Even Yiftach, after the whole battle with Moab, and he's victorious, and then Bnei Ephraim come to him. Yiftach comes from the Yiftach HaGiladi, comes from the Gilad, east of the Arden. Then comes Ephraim. Ephraim walks up to him and says, "Hey, Yiftach, where were we?" Remember the story of Ephraim? Turn Perek Yud Bet. Beginning of Perek Yud Bet. Vayitzaek Ish Ephraim. Vayavot Safona. The tribe of Ephraim, the people of Ephraim. Remember, Yiftach comes from the Gilad, which is the east half of Manasseh. So Ephraim comes up to him, Vayamuli Yiftach, Madua avarta li lachem bivnei Amon, velanu lo karata lalechet imach. Why did you go to war without us? Right? You went to war, you went to battle with Ephraim, you didn't call us. Why not? We would have been happy to participate. Beitcha nisrof alecha ba'esh. We're going to kill you. We're going to burn your family down. We're going to destroy you. So Yiftach responds and says, "Ish riv ha'iti ani ve'ami uvnei amon ma'od ve'ez'ak etchem ve'lo sha'atem oti mi'adam." We were fighting Amon for years. We called. We didn't come. So we saw that you weren't going to come and help us. So we took our life, we took the issue into our own hands, and we dealt with it. Pasuk. So then a war breaks out. Pasuk Dalet, Vayikbots Yiftach et kol anshei Gilad, Vayilachem et Ephraim. A war breaks out. Yiftach takes his people, and they start a war. Whether Ephraim started with Yiftach, Yiftach started with Ephraim, somebody started this war between Yiftach and Ephraim. This is a civil war going on between Yiftach from Manasseh and Bnei Ephraim. And it's a civil war over what? It's a civil war over what? What are they fighting over? Yeah, it's a civil war over the fact that you went to war without us. You took all the glory. You took all the spoils. What about us? The end of this civil war is Pasuk Vav. End of this civil war is Vayishchatuhu el ma'abrot ha'yarden vayipol be'et ahim Ephraim arbim u'shnayim aleph. The end of this civil war is that they slaughtered Bnei Ephraim to the tune of 42,000. Fine. Nobody's guiltless. I'll buy that. So why didn't they respond to them in the first place? Why didn't they respond? In other words, if the war between Bnei Ephraim and Yiftach for Manasseh and Ephraim, the brothers, right? If the war between Manasseh and Ephraim broke out because Manasseh or Yiftach had originally called Ephraim to come and help, and Ephraim refused. Why do you think Ephraim refused? Didn't want to get involved. It's your battle. It's not my battle. You're on the east side of the Yarden. I'm on the west side of the Yarden. Why should I care? Right? You want to fight our battles? Because today. But when Yiftach was victorious, they came and they said, "Hey, wait, what about us?" And Ephraim said, "What do you mean, what about us? Goodbye." Right? 42,000 of them were slaughtered. And there's so many examples of this in Sefer Shoftim. We see this sort of tribal cracks and chasms developing between each sector of the nation that really has lost any sense of a national connection, national identity between them. So you have a civil war between Yiftach of Manasseh and Bnei Ephraim. Gidon. Remember the story of Gidon. Also, similar pattern. I'm just going back in time. We're just walking our way backwards.
Rabbi, since we're speaking about wars, can we dedicate our learning to
making sure no one gets killed?
By all means. Absolutely. Well, that's a different war of a different kind. We're talking about the wars that are tragic, not the ones that are necessary. Yeah, that's true, but fundamentally different. I don't want to compare the two, but yes, I will absolutely.
Anybody anywhere feel bad about all these people getting killed?
I'm sure. We'll see in the end of Pelegesh Begiva. Pelegesh Begiva is probably the worst example of all of this, because really they get slaughtered on both sides, and
thousands of.
Right, well, we're going to see the numbers will double in the story of Pelegesh Begiva. And I suspect that that's really the lowest point that we get to. That's why it's the end of the story, because it's sort of this. But go back to the story to Gidon, and you have a very similar issue where Gidon is fighting Midian, and he's taking his army out to fight with Gidon. And in the meantime, Gidon is from the west side. He's from Menasha west. He gets to cross the Yarden, and he gets to the two cities of Pnuel and Sukkot, which are cities east of the Yarden. I'll tell you in a minute. I'll tell you in a second. Yeah, Perek Chet, Pasuk Dalet. Ve'evo Gidon Yardena. Perek Chet, Pasuk Dalet. Ve'evo Gidon Yardena. Gidon crossed the Jordan. So again, anytime you cross the Jordan, you are crossing a boundary between the tribes. Together with those 300 soldiers, tired, running after the armies of Midian. Vayomer l'anshei Sukkot. Perek Chet, Pasuk Hey. Vayomer l'anshei Sukkot. Tenu na kikrot lechem la'am asher baraglai. Give a little food to the nation, to my people. They're tired, the soldiers, they're chasing after the armies of Zevach and Samuna, the kings of Midian. So what did Sukkot and Pnuel say? Vayomer sarei Sukkot, hakav Zevach and Samuna ata biyadecha ki niten letzva'acha lachem. Do you have Zevach and Samuna in your hands if you capture them, that we're going to give your soldiers food? Meaning?
You don't need it.
No. You don't need it. They do need it. They're tired. They're hungry. I'm not giving it to you. Why not?
Because you haven't won yet.
Right? Yeah, because you haven't won yet. Meaning, if I give you food, if I give you help, what's going to happen? You'll lose the battle. And then I will have taken sides. And then Zevach and Samuna will come after us. So why should I take sides? Right? You, Gidon, from Shevet Menashe. Us, Pnuel and Sukkot, from Shevet from Menashe West. We, from Menashe East. Or maybe from Gad. It's unclear what tribe they're from, but they're certainly of a different geographic and different tribal affiliation. Why should I help you? Why should I take sides? To which Gidon's response is, Vayomer Gidon, Lachen, Betet Hashem et Zerach v'yatzmuna b'yadi, v'dashti et psarchem et kotze ha-midbar v'et ha-barkanim. Okay, you want it that way? Fine. So when the war's over and I've won, I'll come back and I will plow your flesh with the thorns of the desert.
That's great, isn't it?
It's pretty charming. Well, Gidon was a tough guy. Anyway, by the time the war is over and the Zevach and Samuna are destroyed and Gidon is victorious, Pasuk Tet Zayin comes back to the cities of Sukkot and Pnuel. Ve'ikach et ziknei ha'ir ve'et kotzei ha'midbar ve'et ha'bar kanim ve'yoda be'em et anshei Sukkot. He took the elders of the city and the thorns of the desert and he made them intimately familiar one with the other. Ve'et migdal Pnuel natatz ve'yarog et anshei ha'ir, and he killed all the people of the city. This is a massacre. Why? Because they were guilty of treason, refusing to assist the army in its pursuit of an enemy is called treason. Right? There are laws against that. Capital of treason is a capital offense, but nonetheless. But what you see is a pattern that starts early. When we're talking about Gidon, we're talking about hundreds of years before the end of Shoftim, before Yiftach. Well, not before Yiftach. Gidon is, let's say, 40. Gidon is probably 50 or 60 years before Yiftach. We're not sure when Pelegish Begiva takes place, but Pelegish Begiva is a much earlier story. But the pattern that emerges in the storyline of Sefer Shoftim is a constant recurring theme of complex, dynamic relationships between tribe A and tribe B, all within the same national identity. That's part of the issue. That's the theme that Sefer Shoftim, I think, has been focused on since its very beginning. Since the moment that the book began, Perek Aleph, when it talked about which tribes went to conquer land and which tribes did not. From Devorah's famous Shira, in which he talks about which tribes came to assist and which tribes did not. When she called for help and they refused to, and they sat on the other side of the Yarden watching their bleeding sheep instead of coming to fight the wars. Gidon's war with Nun Sukkot, Yiftach's war with Ephraim and the complex marriage relationship, Shevet Dan, every one of these stories has some dynamic of conflict related to an identity between the tribes that is, they're not even perceived as distant cousins, but just in competition with each other, almost as foreigners. And it's not surprising to us because we live in a world in which we have been, essentially tribal identification has been eliminated for the most part, and we see ourselves as Jews or as Israelites. But prior to the creation of that national identity, they leave Egypt as tribes, they merge, they move into the land of Israel as tribes, they conquer the land of Israel for the most part, with the exception of a 7-year blip on the screen in the days of Yeshua, they conquer the land of Israel as separate tribes. There's been nothing to connect them other than some very ancient history, which in those days, who even really knew or understood? They didn't have communication and texts and books like we do. So it's no surprise that the story of Sefer Shoftim is a chronicle of 300 years of essentially tribal leadership that has had a byproduct of continuing to isolate each tribe from each other to the point where we're really dealing with tribes that perceive themselves almost as completely separate groups.
Is the bottom line here inheritance?
No.
So what's the bottom line that's making all these people fight? I mean, we came out as one nation.
Though that's my point. I'm not sure we ever came out as one nation. We came out as 12 tribes, separate tribes. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun. Right?
Yeah, right.
No, I think we have. I think we have changed dramatically. I think Sefer Shoftim doesn't compare in the least to what we have today. But we still had, very geographically separate identities, historically separate identities. They were separate nations. And that's part of the tragedy of Sefer Shoftim.
That we came out as Amishai, that doesn't exist. That's kind of what you're implying.
I think it's short-lived. I think it's short-lived, if it ever. Until such point where we really, I would have to say, hit rock bottom. I have to say, we really hit a point where we recognized that ultimately this kind of tribal separation is disastrous for the people, and ultimately that's what the establishment of Malchut Yisrael is about. That's what Sefer Shmuel is about. The reason for Sefer Shmuel, and the reason why Shmuel is the author of Sefer Shoftim, is because essentially that's what needs to be rectified. That's why we need to move from a Shofet to a Malchus, because what Malchus does is it reunites the people into one flag. When you have one Melech over the whole nation, it suddenly it's a different identity than when you have a Shofet for Shevet Menashe, and a Shofet for Shevet Ephraim, and a leader for Shevet this, you have separate leaders, separate armies. They didn't need it much earlier, but that's, things happened slower in those days. Right. Remember that there's no communication, there's no internet, there's no newspapers, there's no national identity to connect them, and there's no, you know, you, it's very hard to, time frame wise, you can't put yourself, you can't put a modern time frame mentality back into the world of,
is that totally frowned upon?
Excuse me?
Marrying between tribes?
So that's the point, is that one of the symptoms of this breakdown is that you had a sense of tribes didn't marry each other. There's a discussion in the Gemara whether or not that was, whether it was even permissible for tribes to marry each other at that point. There's an opinion that says that, in fact, tribes weren't allowed to marry each other at that point until they allowed it at some point after the story of Pelegesh Begiva. But that's not clear in the text of Tanakh. What seems to be more emerging from the text is that although it was permissible, it certainly was frowned upon. Because if, think about it, if you perceived, if your perception was that a person from another tribe was of a different nation, of a different identity, then marrying from a different tribe was not significantly different than the way we would perceive marrying somebody outside the faith. Right? If Shevet Menashe is a completely separate identity than Shevet Ephraim, marrying somebody from a different Shevet was tantamount to marrying out. Halachically, but socially. Right, and that's essentially where the story of Pelegesh Begiva starts. It starts from the sense that she's from Shevet Yehudah and he's from Shevet Levi, living in Har Ephraim, which means right from the outset, we've got a Yiftach and his Pelegesh, or Zono, or Isha Acheret context, right from the outset, this doesn't bode well for their relationship. Then we have her, Vatizneh Lav Pilakshoy, she runs back to Bethlehem Yehudah, he goes chasing after her. Then they come back, they end up in Shevet Binyamin, completely ignored and rejected, and sitting in the, lying in the streets in the middle of the of Binyamin, in the middle of the city of Givah, doesn't tell us why, until a particular Zaken comes and finds them and has sympathy for them and takes them in, and the Navi immediately points out that this Zaken is from Har Ephraim, which means that he's a landsman. So now you ask the question, does he take them in because he's a nice, kind guy and has his neshama for hospitality? Or does he take them in because he's the only person from Har Ephraim? He's willing to give him room and board. There's a real... Because of the music, yeah, it's very, very appropriate music for this. That's right.
So, what were any of the connecting points
between
the 12 separate nations? What were the connecting points?
Were there any?
Right.
I think they were stronger at the beginning, right? In the earlier years, they were much more connected, but over the course of time, remember.
But with all these wars, what was left as any connecting point?
It's hard. Ultimately, they're going to have to, and we'll see it a little bit in the aftermath of Shevet Binyamin, in the aftermath of, I'm painting a very extreme picture. You understand? It's a little bit exaggerated. But I think that the point is that where Sefer Shoftim starts, if I take as an example, Devorah's famous battle, Dvar and Barak, we take that as an example. If there are 12 tribes, 6 come to help her in the battle and 6 don't. That doesn't start well. Right. So there's some connection. On the one hand, half of them
right.
come. Right.
Half's better than others.
That's right. So you saw, I call that a crack. And I think Devorah saw that as a crack. Right. Go back a little bit earlier. Go back a little bit earlier to the end of Sefer Yehoshua. Go back all the way to the beginning, 300 years. Go back to the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. When Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh finish the conquest, they go over the land of the Arden, and they build themselves a giant mizbeach on the borders of on the boundary of the Arden River. Remember that story? And Pinchas goes running after him, ready to go to war with them, ready to say, "How dare you, treasonous people, going to build your own mishkan on the other side of the Arden?" And God's response: "We're not trying to build our own tabernacle, our own sanctuary, our own mishkan. What were they trying to do?" Do you remember that conversation? It's actually very, very telling for this issue. Go back to the end of Yehoshua. Mm-hmm. Perek Kaf Bet.
Where?
Perek Kaf Bet. What pasuk? Good question. I'll tell you in a second. Let's start with pasuk Yud.
286.
That is. You said Yud, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Start with pasuk Yud. Vayavo el glilot ha-yarden asher be'eretz Kanaan. They come to the edge of the Yarden. Vayivnu b'nei Reuvenu b'nei Gad v'chatzi shevet ha-menashe ha-sham mizbeach al ha-yarden mizbeach kadol l'mar'eh. Reuven, Gad, Menashe, they built on the edge of the Yarden a very great, a giant mizbeach, giant altar. וישמעו בני ישראל לאמור, הנה בנו בני ראובן ובני גד וחצי שבט המנשה את המזבח אל מול ארץ כנען, אל גלילות הירדן, אל עבר בני ישראל. בני ישראל on the west side of the Yarden heard that the tribes, ראובן גד and Menashe, they built themselves on the east. What did they build? A giant altar. Now you build a giant altar, what do you usually use a giant altar for?
Sacrifices.
Sacrifices, meaning you're building yourself your own altar. Mishkan, your own tabernacle. Now, this is very early. This is the days of Yeshua. So we're talking about the days of the Mishkan in Shiloh when it was first set up. And certainly when it was first set up, everybody understood the Mishkan was that which was supposed to connect them. You ask what was supposed to connect them together, right?
The Mishkan, the Mikdash.
That's exactly why the Torah has a mitzvah of Aliyah LeRegel three times a year or four times a year. So that people understand that what anchors them together, no matter what tribe they're from, is the sense of purpose, mission, identity as a Jewish nation, as a nation of God, one mikdash. That's exactly the point. Here they build themselves their own mizbeach. So what do they do? Vayishmu b'nei Yisrael, vayikalu kol adat b'nei Yisrael Shiloh la'alot alehem la'tzava. So they gather the people together in Shiloh. Why in Shiloh?
That's where the Mishkan is.
And from there to go out on a campaign of war. The first threat of civil war is here. It ends peacefully, but nonetheless, this is the first threat of civil war. Vayishlachu b'nei Yisrael o b'nei Reuven o b'nei Gad v'al chatzi shevet ha-menashel eretz ha-gilad et Pinchas ben Elazar ha-kohen. Who do they send to lead this delegation? They sent a very nice peacemaker. Person known for his calm diplomacy. His name is Pinchas. Very calm diplomacy. Vasra nesiyim imo nasi echad levet av l'chol matot Yisrael. 10 representatives of each of the 10 tribes. Unified. Right? Unity. National identity. The only problem is it's 10 tribes. Why is it 10 and not 12? Because it's 10 against 2. Right? It's 10 against 2. V'ish rosh bet avatav hem alafa Yisrael. ויבואו בני ראובן ובני גד וחצי שבט מנשה אל ארץ הגלעד וידברו איתם לאמור. They approached בני גד ובני ראובן and they said to them the following. Now look at the language. כה אמרו כל עדת השם. Thus saith the Jewish people, the nation of Israel, the nation of God. And who are you, Kimasab? And who are you, chopped liver? Right? We are Adat Hashem. We speak for Adat Hashem. What is this trespass? What is this violation that you have committed? You've built yourself an altar. You rebelled against God. And he starts giving a history lesson about Avon Baal Peor, which is where Pinchas became famous for the story of Zimri. He remembers that well. One person was sinned and everybody was punished for it. Take a look at Pasuk Yutet. V'chim t'me'a eretz achuzatchem. If you think that your land is second class, that you are separated from us, that you now live in chutz la'aretz, in outside of the sanctity of the land of Israel, you live in a land that is tamei. So I'll give you a solution. Ivu lechem al eretz achuzat Hashem asheshechan shem mishkan Hashem. Why don't you cross over into the land of God's inheritance? Why don't you come back into the land which contains the Mishkan? V'yachazu b'tochenu, and take an inheritance amongst us. V'Hashem al timrodu, what are you building your own mishkan for, your own mikdash for? Don't rebel against God, don't rebel against us. Build yourself your own altar. Remember the story of Achan, violated the spoils of Yericho, and everybody suffered for it. And you think we're going to be scot-free, you're going to violate this principle of building an altar outside of the Mishkan, we're going to suffer for it. Very harsh words from this calm diplomat. The result is, and the answer, and I think is very telling, V'yanu b'nei Reuven u'b'nei Gad v'chazi shevet ha-Menasheh, v'yidabru ha-rosh alfei Yisrael. So Reuven, Gad, half of Menasheh responded, and they're reading in Pasuk Chaf Bet. El, right, Yeshua, Parachapet, Pasachapet. El Elohim Hashem. El Elohim Hashem. Hu Yodea, V'Yisrael Hu Yodea. Im Bemered, V'im Bemal Hashem, Al Toshienu Yom Hazeh. God is my witness. Three times he says it. I swear in the name of God, if we are in violation of a trespass, a violation of building an altar outside of the altar of the Mishkan, then may God not save us. We built on a Mizbeach. We built an altar. We didn't build an altar. La'alot alav olam mincha. You think we built an altar for sacrifice purposes? We did no such thing. Pasuk Chav Dalet. We did not build this altar for sacrifices. Why did we build it? Do you remember? Why did they build this giant altar? It was a monument, correct. Im lo midaga midavar asinu et zot lemor. We did this because we were worried about something. You know what we were worried about? We, Reuven, Gad, half of Menasheh, on the east side of the Yarden. You know what we were worried about? We were worried about what's going to happen tomorrow and the day after and the day after, a generation from now, or two generations from now. Machar, yomru v'nechem levaneinu. Your children will say to our children, or to us, meaning our generations, to our children, meaning about our children, and you will say, ma lachem v'loshem elokei Yisrael. What share, what portion, what business do you have to lay claim to the God of Israel? Gvul natan Hashem b'neinu v'nechem. God put a boundary between your people and my people, the Jordan River. B'nei Reuven, b'nei Gad, et ha-Yarden. And therefore, ein lachem chelek b'Hashem. You will reject us. You will say, we have no chelek. We're not part of the Jewish people. V'shbitu b'nechem et b'neinu. And your children will destroy our children. There'll be wars between our children.
But that's what happened.
Correct. They were 100% correct. That's the irony of it, that they saw it. They predicted it. Vanome, therefore, what did they do? Nasen livnot et mizbeach lo leolav lo lezavach ki edu beinenu veneichemu ven dorotenu acharenu la'avod et avodat Hashem lefanav ba'alotenu bizvachenu bishlamenu. We built this Mizbeach as a testimony, as a monument. We built a model replica of the Mizbeach of Shiloh. We built it here to tell our children and our grandchildren, and to prove to our grandchildren, and to prove to your grandchildren, that we're part of the same people. And we worship the same God. We've been to Shiloh. This monument connects us to Shiloh. So your children won't accuse us of not being legitimate, bona fide members of the Jewish people. This is Yehoshua's day. This is still first generation in the land of Israel. And they're afraid that the boundaries between the tribes east of the Jordan and west of the Jordan would separate the tribes into separate identities nationally and spiritually. It doesn't take long. Right? It doesn't take long for those divisions to spread, because there's no connection. It's not analogous to what goes on today, because what goes on today is a different world. We're still in a world of global communication, in a world in which you have essentially eliminated all tribal divisions, where there's the geographic divisions do not necessarily identify one completely separately, a little bit, but certainly not to the extent. The world of Tanakh, if you lived in Ephraim in the north and you lived in Yehuda in the south, there's virtually no connection between them. So for 10, 20, 40, 100, 200 years, 300 years, how many times do you see each other, let alone marry each other, let alone see each other as the same army, as the same. You know what actually is very analogous to it? It's actually interesting because we're a couple of days before Thanksgiving. The history of the United States has a very similar process. Goes through a very similar transition. Because when the history of the United States, because when the United States was first created, after the Revolution, right, the story of the American Constitution is actually follows a very similar pattern. Because they were dreadfully frightened of the question of whether each state was independent of each other and created its own state, or whether to create a national federal government.
They're still fighting about it.
Right. But imagine in a world where there's no communication, there's no television, there's virtually, newspapers are rare, right? And then at least they had printing. And the question becomes, every state builds their own militia, builds their own country, builds their own army, mints their own coin.
But you don't even have...
Right? The Articles of Confederation, with which the American colonies first adopted after the Revolution... Every state minted their own coin, had their own currency, and had their own army. And it did not take long for them to realize that that's not building one country, that's building 13 separate countries. In Sefer Shoftim, every Shofet has its own army, which means that every tribe had its own army, not coins currency was probably in a similar vein. What connected them? If maybe the Mishkan and the Mikdash were supposed to connect them, we already saw in Pesach Micha how poorly a job the Mishkan functioned in that capacity. So no surprise, therefore, that this whole episode of Pelegesh Begiva is kind of the climax of all of these divisions that have finally come to a head to the point where the events of Perek Yutet lead to one of the most dramatic civil wars, which is the war against Binyam. The irony there is that all the tribes finally get together. Ki ish echad chaverim. They finally get unified in their annihilation of Sheva Binyam. That's the irony of the story.
It's Mizbeah. Became authentic for this portion.
Well, they didn't use it in this context. It wasn't being used as a functional mizbech. It was being set up as a monument as a monument only.
Yeah, but
the tribes misread it, right? The tribes missaw it. They saw this giant mizbech. They saw that they thought it was a separate mishkan.
Right.
So I understand Reuven and Gad. That's not my concern. Isn't what Reuven and Gad did. Concern is that their fear of what the divisions would ultimately lead to is precisely what happened.
What happened.
That's correct. They called it right. And it will ultimately take a breakdown of the institution of the Shoah. How does the story end? Now, what's the main theme of these two stories together? Bayimim Ahem and Melech B'Yisrael. Ish Kol Yisha B'Nav Yaseh.
But they both called it right.
Correct.
The 2.5 tribes called it right. You know, we'll forget that we're part of you, and the other part is.
They didn't say we'll forget we're part of you, though. So you'll forget we're part of you.
And the other part of Israel said, "Hey, you're going to be idol worshippers," and they all became idol worshippers.
Yeah.
So they're both right.
That's exactly it. There's the irony. All right. Let's go back to Perek Yutet. So up until now, we've spent a good deal of time talking about. Back, I just want to sort of today's purpose of today's shiur is to pull together some loose ends, if you will. Up until now, we've gone through the story. We've talked about the relationships, the dynamic of the relationships, and the tribal breakdown that leads to this tragedy. Last week, briefly, we sort of picked up on a theme in the story of the events that took place in the city of Giv'ah with this Pilegesh. We picked up on a theme that reminded us of another story in Tanakh. The story of Lot and Sdom, correct. The angels in Sdom, the visitors to the story of Sdom. And that connection actually is discussed at length in the Mefarshim, as to what exactly parallels there are between the Levi and his Pilegesh in the house of the Zaken in the city of Giv'ah, and Lot and his visitors in the house in the city of Sdom. So just to do a quick recap, starting with Pasuk Tet, Perek Yud Tet, Pasuk Tet, Zion. V'nei Ish Zaken. You have it? Pasuk Tet Zion? 1916. 1916. Quick year for war. Everybody have it? V'nei ish zaken ba min ma'aseh min ha-sadeh ba'erev v'ha ish mihar Ephraim v'ugar b'giv'ah v'anshe ha-makom b'nem yemini. A very telling pasuk. Right? The man is sleeping in the middle of the street together with his pilagesh and his na'ar and his donkeys. A man comes, a zaken, who happens to be from Har Ephraim, living in the Givah, and the locals of the Givah are from Shevet Binyamin. So there you have in one pasuk encapsulating the core of the problem. Right. Who's loyal to whom is based on what Shevet they're from. Vayisa ina vayar et ha'ish ha'oreach, lifted up his eyes, saw the guest, Berechov Ha'ir. Also an interesting phrase. Lifted up his eyes and saw the Oreach. Sound familiar?
Abraham.
Same phrase appears by Abraham. When Abraham ran off to the guests, what did he invited them into his house? What are the first thing he told them to do?
Wash their hands and feet.
Correct? Ana telech ma'ayin tavo. Where are you going from? Where are you coming? Where are you going? Where are you coming from? Vayomer elav avrim anachnu mibet lechem Yehuda ad yarkete har Ephraim. Misham anochi ve'elech ad bet lechem Yehuda ve'et bet Hashem ani holech ve'ein ish masef oti abayta. I'm from Ephraim. I was coming from Bet Lechem. I'm here in Binyamin. Nobody's willing to take me in. And I have food. I don't need anything. I just need a place to sleep. Pasuk Chaf. Vayomer ha'ish ha'zaken, shalom lach, rak kol machsorcha alai, peace be upon you, I'll take care of your provisions, rak berchov al talan, don't sleep in the street. These parts is not safe. Don't sleep in the streets. Vayevyeo levito, vayaval lachamorim, vayirchatsu raglehem, vayochlu vayishtu. Wash their feet, right? Gave him food and drink. They are enjoying themselves, having a good time, they're eating and drinking and having a feast. Wicked people of the city, wicked, worthless people, surrounded the house, knocking at the door. They said to the Baal HaBayit, to the owner of this house, Hotze et ha'ish asheba el betcha, take this person who came into your house, take him out, v'nedaenu, that we may know him. Vetze alehem ha'ish bal habayit, so the ish bal habayit goes out to them, v'yomer alehem, al achai, al tamayu. No. No, my brethren. Don't do this evil thing. This person is my guest. Do not do this dastardly act. Hine biti habetula ufilagshayu. He really wants to take my daughter, take his pilagesh, but don't take my guest. Otziyana otam, lanu otam, have your way with them. Vesulam atov enechem, whatever you want to do.
Velaishazelo tasu dvar hanivala azot. What is that about?
Right. Talk about perversion of priorities and perception and perspectives.
What
it's
is
unbelievable,
that about?
Right?
Is that because women were chattel?
Possibly in the eyes of this individual. Some suggest that Ramban has a theory that he knew that they wouldn't be satisfied with the daughter, so he knew that it was an idle offer, that they wouldn't take him up on it, but that doesn't really satisfy us too well either.
There doesn't seem to be any loyalty to the women in this story.
Certainly not to the Pilagesh.
Even to his daughter, although
by lot also offered his daughters.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So what is that?
That's part of the problem. So again, that suggests that with the case of the daughter, he knew that it was they weren't going to take him up on it. But and so you know, but as I said, it's not a good answer. It's not a satisfying answer. Number one, and number two, it doesn't help us with regards to the Pilagesh.
Culturally, at that point in time, did women have no value?
I'm not sure it's no value.
No,
I don't think it's a value issue. I think that there's a perversion here. Let's put it this way. If the story was being presented as, you see how wonderful this guy was? He saved the life of his guest if the story was being presented to tell us how wonderful these guys behaved, right, then you may be able to mount an argument. But the story is not being presented as to tell us, look how wonderful this guy was, he saved his guests. Right? The story is presented to us in a very sarcastic, very critical eye, precisely because of the mistreatment of everybody involved in the story. So you can't draw a value system on the basis of people who are described as anshei belial, evil, worthless people. You say, okay, well, what's the value system that they live by? It's not fair, right?
Okay.
That's the whole point of the story is the irony here. But take a look. Now, having read these few psukim,
the guest. Does
anybody
talk about nothing? If it was
important? You mean the man, the Zakain, who threw his wife Pilagesh out to the wolves and then picked her up and threw her on the donkey and chopped her up?
No. Not that one.
That's the one. That's the guest in the house. You mean the host?
Right. Yeah, the host.
Oh, the host.
Did that happen to him?
The host.
They all get wiped out, so I'm not... Ultimately, in the battle, they all get wiped out. We don't have any information as to who he is or what he is.
Right. That's
right. Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought you said the guest, the host. All right, let's take a look at the story of Lot for a moment. Let's go from bad to worse for a minute. Let's take a look at the story of Lot.
So you're putting Lot in a much worse category when you say that. To worse. I did bad thing because that's what
I don't think Lot comes out to. I don't think he comes out too squeaky clean in that story either. Perek Yud Tet. Breshit. Perek Yud Tet.
Yud Tet is what?
19.
Thank you.
Oh, that's a good question.
It's on page 19.
Let's see.
Starts on 18.
Well, let's start from the beginning of the parak. Let's review a little bit of the text of the story. the story we're familiar with, but now we're going to look at it from a textual perspective of the conversation and the dialogue between Lot and the people of Sodom. Vayavo shnei ha-malachim Sodoma, the two malachim who've been disguised up until now as guests, arrive in Sodom by nightfall, by erev. V'lot yoshev b'shar Sodom. Lot is sitting in the gate, sitting at the entrance, possibly as a shofet, possibly as a judge. Sitting in the gate of a city is always a connotation of being some kind of a leader, a judge, judicial. They even say that to him later on. Chad balagur v'yishpot aleinu. V'yar Lot v'yakom likvatam v'yishtachu apayim arza. Lot saw the guests, he runs after them, following in the footsteps of his mentor, namely
Avraham.
Vayomer inei na Adonai, my masters, suduna el beit avdechem, come into my house. Velinu v'rachatzu raglechem, again, wash your feet. V'ishkamtem v'alachtem v'dakechem, go on your way. In the morning you'll go on your way. Vayomru lo ki barachov nalin. No, we want to stay in the street. So first of all, right off the bat, there's a profound difference between these two stories. Namely,
they stay in the street.
They want to stay. Their offer is to stay in the street. Whereas the Levi in our story is bitter that he's in the street. Nobody will give him the time of day. Nobody will take him in. Here the Malachim say to Lot, we're quite happy where we are. Vayiftzar b'me'od. He begs them. He beseeches them. Vayasuru elav v'yavo el beto. He brings them into the house. Vayas lahem mishteh. Remember what it said? It said vayachlu vayishtu bayas. They ate, they drank, they had a feast. Matzot afa vayochelu. We make the matzah. There's a medrash that says it was Pesach. All right. Terem yishkavu, before they have a chance to go to sleep. Va'anshe ha'ir, anshe Sodom, the name, members of the city, the people of Sodom. Now that's a bit of a repetitive phrase. Anshe ha'ir, anshe Sodom. Why repeat the phrase? Do you remember what the phrase was in Pelagish Begiva? Anshe ha'ir, Anshe b'nei Belial, correct. Worthless people. What does it say here? Anshe ha'ir? Anshe Sodom. I assume the two phrases are identical.
Yeah.
Right. One is a description of who they are, and the other is a description of what they are. Right. Anshe ha'ir, Anshe Sodom.
And they're surrounding the house.
Nasabu al abayit, they surrounded the house. Mina aviyad zaken, kol ha'am mikotzeh. Young to old, the entire people, the entire city. Vayikru Lot vayomru lo, ayeh ha'anashim asher ba'o elecha halayla. Where are the people who came to you in the middle of the night? Hotziyem eleinu, take them, bring them out to us, v'neida otam, that we may know them.
We can assume here, though, that people is men, right?
Yes. That's exactly why his response is, and that's what Rashi says, that when they said, let us know them, Rashi immediately comments, Mishkav Zachar. They wanted to know them in a sexual sense, hence the phrase, right, in a homosexual sense, or to abuse them, but the whole notion of sodomy, etc., all comes from the same, from Sodom, and all comes from the same context. Vayetze alehem lota petcha. Lot goes out to them, like the Zaken went out to them. V'adelet zagar acharav, closed the door behind them, and he said, V'yomar, al na achai tareu. No, my brothers, don't do this evil thing. Hinei na li shtei banot. If you really want desire, so I have two daughters. Mashallah yadu ish. They've never been with a man. Otsiyana ten alechem. You can have them. V'yasulem katov be'enechem. What is good in your eyes? But to these people, don't touch. They have come into my protection. The response of Anshei Sodom, Vayamru, Gesh Hala, get away from us. You are an outsider. You came to live in this city. You came to as a sojourner. And now you become a judge over us. They were going to break down the door. So the two people went, they took him, and they brought Lot back into the house. And the story ends very differently because they're dealing with Malachim and not with a Levi and his Pilagish. But the parallels between these two stories are really striking. The circumstances are parallel. Even the phraseology is parallel. And what I did, what I gave you on this first source page, on that sheet that I handed out before, on the first page, is I charted out as sort of by breaking up the phrases, all the phrases of these two stories that are almost identical, with certain differences that I think are telling, but almost identical. So on the left-hand side, you have the story of Pilagish Begiva, and the dialogue between the Zaken and the Anshei Sodom. And on the right-hand side, you have the dialogue between Lot. Sorry, the left-hand side is the dialogue between Anshei Giv'ah and the Zaken. On the right-hand side, you have the dialogue between Lot and the people of Sodom.
Why do you think they're so parallel?
Why are they so parallel? Yeah. I mean, what's the reason for the parallel?
Right.
You tell me.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
Whenever there's a parallel in Tanakh, parallels in Tanakh tell us two things.
Some things never change.
Well, so the parallels in Tanakh usually point to, number one, the fact that I need to compare two stories in order to understand them. Each one will tell us something about the other. And number two, that they often highlight the subtle differences that make all the difference in the world. And there are subtle differences between the story of Sodom and the story of the Givah. Subtle differences that we're going to have to explore. The Ramban is a lengthy piece in Chumash and Parshat Shmo and Parshat Vayera on the story of Pilagish Begiva. The Ramban is a lengthy piece in which he compares the two stories, ultimately asking the question: In which story was the behavior worse?
That's what you call a race to the bottom.
Right. Right. But it has implications for us because of the response to Sodom and the response to Giv'ah. Ultimately, remember that here, where Sodom God reacted, in Giv'ah, the people reacted. So in order to understand the reaction of the people, we have to ask the question, who was guilty here? What level of guilt was there? Was it a justified war? Was it not a justified war? There's all kinds of moral questions that we have to address because we're dealing with people's behavior.
Do the angels count only in one story? Are there angels?
Well, the behavior of the Zaken of the Levi is, comparable to the behavior of the Malachim, but in the contrast, right? But Malachim are Malachim, so I can't. Neither does it matter. So if you take a look at the two stories, and what I've done, leaving the first two paragraphs for a moment, starting with the middle, the third paragraph, on the left-hand side, by Pilegesh, it says, Hema metivim et libam, v'aneh anshei ha'ir, anshei b'nei b'li'al, nasabu et ha'bayit. By Lot, almost the same phrase. Terem yishkavu, v'anshei ha'ir, anshei Sodom, nasabu al ha'bayit. There's one difference between these two phrases. I pointed it out before. By us it says, anshei b'nei b'li'al. Well, by us I mean, by Pilagish Begiva, it says, b'nei b'li'al, and by Sodom, it says, anshei Sodom. I'm assuming that that difference is to highlight the fact that that is essentially a synonym. They're essentially the same. To talk about people as anshei b'nei b'li'al, and to talk about them as Sodom, he tells you the same, that they're the same. Mina aviat zaken kol ami katze. By us it says mitabkim al adalat, they knocked on the door. Vemu ish el balabait. It leaves out the description of young to old, the totality of the city. That's left out. I don't think it was the total population of the city in our case. But the phrase hotse et ha'ish asher ba el betcha, in parallel to this phrase by Lot, ha'anashim asher ba'u elecha halayla hotziem eleinu. And then in both cases, it ends with the declaration, v'neida otam. Now, only in the case of Pilegesh do we know for a fact that their intent was sexual. Why do I say that? Forget what he offered them. How do I know that the people of the surrounding the house's intention were in fact sexual?
They say it.
So the problem here is that neida'enu is a term that can mean more than one thing, right? Neida'enu, if we wanted to be nice and kind, we could say neida'enu means...
We want to get acquainted.
Yeah. Why should you be the only ones to have guests? We want to get acquainted with them too. Uh-huh. Right? How do we know that the phrase v'neida'enu in the context of Pilegesh Begiva actually means sexually? Not always. It certainly comes from Adam, right? That's where the first time it's used, but it's not always, and it's not exclusive. But in the case of Pilegesh Begiv, I think it's obvious. How do I know what their intentions were? No. Because they act on them. What did they do to the Pilegesh? That's how he appeases them. He appeases them, he gets rid of them by throwing out his Pilegesh to them. So they take the Pilegesh and they're done. So clearly their intention is not
social.
No, that's my point. That's exactly my point. In the Pilegesh Begiva, it's clear, it's in the text, it's in the story, you see it. When they say v'neida'enu, and the next thing they do is that is mass rape of this poor Pilegesh.
If they turn out the man, maybe they would have sat down and
have... We don't know. Correct. But that's but let's assume for the moment that we can derive from their desires are reflected in their behavior, right? In the case of Sodom, what's interesting is we never know what they wanted to do. And all we have is the declaration of the Torah that the people of Sodom are evil people. But on that pasuk, the Medrash says, the v'neida otam, and Rashi quotes the Medrash, the Medrash says, mishkav zachar. And all the Mepharshim point to the question of how did Rashi know, how did the Medrash know what the intention of B'nai Sodom was?
So they point to the other story?
And I think the answer is that the two stories are designed to be parallel and read in parallel. And if the Pilegesh Begiva's results are clear, then it's an indication that the story of Sodom had the same motivation. Part of what we're doing Shabbos afternoon in this middle mini-series on Medrash, we're going to start looking at Midrashim and the methodology behind Medrash. One of the methodologies that we're going to be looking at is exactly that. How one story, one Medrash in one place is actually based on a biblical parallel somewhere else without necessarily having to explicitly draw it out.
So, Rabbi, it forces us to look back.
Mm-hmm.
And then we look more closely at that history.
Correct. Except that remember that Midrash and Chumash is working the other way. It forces you to look
right.
Forward.
No, but I meant what we're working on
right.
Today.
Correct. By taking these two stories, drawing them in parallel, in the parallel of the events and the parallel of the text,
right.
We are now doing what's called close reading of the two stories, both to understand the differences, the similarities between them, and then we will come to very profound differences between them, Bezrat Hashem, next week. Even the phrase of the reaction, we'll just finish this and then we'll adjourn. But even the reaction, Vayomer Alehem Lot, what did Lot say to them? Al na achai tareu. Do not do this evil thing. What did the Ish say to them? Vayetzei Alehem Ish Alehem Vayomer Al achai al tareu na. Even the phrase of al tareu is the same phrase in both cases. The offer in Lot's case of the two daughters in parallel to the law, the offer here of the daughter and the Pilegesh. He doesn't have two daughters, so he can't offer two daughters. And even the phrase with which the story ends, V'yasu ota lahem katov be'enichem. It's the same phrase in our case, V'yasu lahem katov be'enichem. So, I'm going to stop here, but I think it's sufficient to demonstrate that the stories of the parallel between Lot and Anshes and the Pilegesh, or between Sodom and the behavior of Givah, is so strikingly similar both in theme and text that it begs the comparison. What the significance of that comparison is, we will try to understand, Bezrat Hashem, next week.